The following is a teaching message from the chapel in Te Aritu. For more information about the chapel, please visit www.thechapel.org.nz.
It's been 14 years since Jacob arrived in Haran to what was at the time a very warm welcome. As soon as Laban heard the news that Jacob had come, his sister's son, he hurried out to meet him and he embraced him and he kissed him. He said, "You are my own flesh and blood." And he said, "Look, just because you're a relative, there's no reason why you should work for me for nothing. I want to honor you." Boy, how things change. For 7 years, Jacob then serves Laban so that he could marry Laban's younger daughter, Rachel. And you remember from a few weeks back that he wakes up in the morning and rolls over and it's Leah. He's been deceived. However, a week later, he marries Rachel, and over the following 7 years, he continues to serve. And in those second 7 years, we remember that he had they had 11 sons in that time, and a daughter to Leah and to Rachel, and through their maidservants. And this morning we pick up the story in Genesis chapter 30, and verse 25. After Rachel gave birth to Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me on my way so that I can go back to my homeland. Give me my wives and children for whom I have served you, and I will be on my way. You know how much work I have done for you." But Laban says, If I have found favor in your eyes, please stay, for I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you." He added, "Name your wages and I will pay them." So an interesting little note, I've already circled it there, by divination. It's interesting that the NIV says by divination, which does not have good connotations. By the number of other translations, it says, "I have done this, I have by careful observation, by experience." And so it's a little bit unsure how it is that Laban decides that it is God that has blessed Jacob's efforts. Without a doubt, God has blessed Jacob's efforts. His family has grown, Laban's flocks have multiplied. And the only question that really is the means by which Laban either discerned or decided that such multiplication was a result of God's blessing on Jacob. But what we can be absolutely certain of is that God has blessed Jacob's efforts, and Laban's wealth has grown significantly. So Jacob said to him, "You know how I have worked for you and how your livestock has fared under my care. The little you had before I came has increased greatly, and the Lord has blessed you. And the Lord has blessed you wherever I have been. But now, when may I do something for my own household?" "What shall I give you?" he asked. "Don't give me anything," Jacob replied. "But if you will do this one thing for me, I will go on tending your flocks and watching over them. Let me go through all your flocks today and remove from them every speckled or spotted sheep, every dark-coloured lamb, and every spotted or speckled goat. They will be my wages. And my honesty will testify more for me in the future, because whenever you check on the wages you have paid me, any goat in my possession that is not speckled or spotted, or any lamb that is not dark coloured, will be considered stolen." "Agreed," said Laban. "Let it be as you have said." That same day he, that is Laban, removed all of the male goats that were streaked and spotted, and all the speckled or spotted female goats, all that had white on them, and all the dark coloured lambs, and he placed them in the care of his sons. Then he put a 3-day journey between himself and Jacob, while Jacob continued to tend the rest of Laban's flocks. Do you ever get one of those days, or one of those weeks, or one of those years when life just seems really confusing? Well, this is one of those passages that has that kind of feel to it. It's just confusing. And I've spent a lot of time trying to work out speckled and spotted and striped and sheep, and it's like, man, get my head around that one. But there's some simple truths in it, and hopefully I've sort of unpacked as much as I can. So 14 years, two daughters married, and 12 grandchildren later. When Jacob had first arrived in Haran, Laban was all over him. Love you, brother. Love you, my nephew. Come in, welcome, be embraced, come be part of my family. How can I reward you for your efforts? And now, Laban is, how can I make myself wealthy? He's gone from being the valued nephew to being a willing worker to be exploited. Laban understands that to get more spotted and speckled and darker sheep and goats, one must start with these in the flock. So he immediately rounds all of them up and he takes them on a three-day journey away from Jacob with him and his sons. The earlier deception of Laban having given Leah as Jacob's wife, when Jacob was expecting Rachel, Laban had explained that away as being, well, it's our custom. But there's no custom now in what Laban has done. Laban is thinking nothing of culture and customs, nothing of his daughters and his grandchildren. Now he is simply thinking about the accumulation of wealth. In contrast, we now have Jacob, who previously we've seen as self-serving and opportunistic, even cheating on his own twin brother to cheat him out of his birthright. Jacob is now learning to be a better man. Jacob had encountered God at Bethel, and he has learned that perseverance pays off. After all, having missed out on Leah, on Rachel the first time, he was willing to work another 7 years for Rachel. He's watched his family grow, and he has seen the evidence of God's hand on his labours. So we see that Laban is on this very much a downhill path, all now focused around him and his wealth. And Jacob, it seems, is on this pathway up. And so one of the first lessons for me is, who you are is always far less important than who you are becoming. Don't give up on the journey. It's not even who you were. It's who you are now is far less important than who you are becoming. There's no point in this life where we arrive and go, that's good, I'm here. Because the moment we stop pressing forward, we can start slipping back. So Jacob doesn't complain, he doesn't cut and run. Because, you know, if you're going to carry on that breeding program, you need the spotted and speckled in your flocks, and Laban's just taken them all and headed 3 days' journey away. He's robbed Jacob of every opportunity to work for the very thing that was going to be his wages. But Jacob doesn't complain. He doesn't cut and run. Instead, he's focused on growing the wealth of his own immediate family and then returning to Canaan, to his parents, and to the land of God's promise. It doesn't matter that Laban has taken all of the sheep and the goats, which in the normal rules of breeding will produce Jacob's wages. You've got that? So the speckled and spotted sheep and goats are going to be Jacob's wages. And the very sheep and goats that can produce those wages are now 3 days' journey away. And so in the natural, it would seem that Jacob has no way of receiving his wages. But he's not worried about that. He's trusting God. In the natural, Laban's clear assumption is that Jacob now has little chance of success. All those sheep and goats that were to be born in the flocks, none of them will be speckled or spotted. They will all belong to Laban. There may be a few genetic throwbacks, as happens in the breeding of a flock, but mostly Jacob's success would be to Laban's benefit. But Jacob has a plan. And this is where it gets even more confusing. Jacob, however, took fresh-cut branches from poplar, almond, and plane trees, and made white stripes on them by peeling the bark and exposing the white inner wood of the branches. Then he placed the peeled branches in all of the watering troughs so that they would be directly in front of the flocks when they came in to drink. When the flocks were in heat and came to drink, they mated in front of the branches, and they bore young that were streaked and speckled or spotted. Jacob set apart the young of the flock by themselves, but made the rest of the sheep face the streaked and dark-coloured animals that belonged to Laban. Then he made separate flocks for himself and did put them with Laban, and did not put them with Laban's animals. When the stronger females were in heat, Jacob would place the branches and the troughs in front of the animals so they would mate near the branches. But if the animals were weak, he would not place them there, so the weak animals went to Laban and all the strong animals went to Jacob. In this way, the man grew exceedingly prosperous and came to own large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. And so I'm reading this passage and I'm thinking back a very long way to my first year at university studying biology and genetics. And I'm really confused as to how this works. Now, without a doubt, some of this was really simple. The stronger ones in the flock, when bred, would have stronger offspring. So that was kind of logical and simple. But this whole fresh-cut branches from the poplar tree and the almond and the plane trees and making white stripes on them by peeling back the bark and exposing the wood, I can see them doing it, but I can't understand how that works. Is this a real thing? Is there some chemical in those trees that is released into the water that changes the breeding pattern in the animals? Or is there some chemical that's released into the brain of the sheep and the goats as they're mating that affects the genetic outcome? Is there some process at work here that we don't understand? Or is this a miracle? Is this simply a literal act of God? Is this divine intervention? And then I have the question, if it's just simply divine intervention, what's with all the sticks and the watering and the timing? And it's like, could not God just make sure that all of those that are born would be of speckled and spotted and therefore in Jacob's flocks? Wouldn't that be much simpler than this complicated process of three different trees and cutting them in? And so my mind is in confusion. But thinking about this, I don't believe it matters whether it was strange science or divine intervention. The only thing that matters is that Jacob did it. Why? Because if we take a step forward into next week's reading, Jacob calls Leah and Rachel and he says to them, "You know that I have worked for your father with all my strength. Your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. However, God has not allowed him to harm me. If he said the speckled ones will be your wages, then all of the flocks gave birth to speckled young. And if he said the streaked ones will be your wages, then all of the flocks bore streaked young." So God has taken away your father's livestock and has given them to me. In the breeding season, I once had a dream in which I looked up and I saw the male goats mating with the flock that was streaked and speckled or spotted. And the angel of the Lord said to me in a dream, "Jacob." I answered, "Here I am." And he said, "Look up and see that the male goats mating with the flock are streaked and speckled and spotted, for I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now leave this land at once and go back to your native land. I can only assume that as Jacob's seeing this vision, that he's seeing these branches that are cut. And so what he's actually doing is he's actually following what was revealed to him that day in the dream. And so it seems to me as I read this that the key to Jacob's success in his breeding strategy wasn't about the science and it wasn't about the miraculous, it was actually simply about the obedience. Now it may be that God was revealing some previously unknown and long since forgotten principles of genetics and breeding. God has been known to teach a farmer how to plant crops and to reap a harvest. In Isaiah we read, when a farmer ploughs for planting, does he plough continually? Does he keep on breaking up and working the soil? When he's leveled the surface, does he not sow caraway? And it goes on and it says, his God instructs him and teaches him in the right way. The normal process of the farming, it says, his God instructs him and teaches him in the right way. And that story continues and says, caraway is not straight. Then it says, all of this comes from the Lord Almighty, whose plan is wonderful and whose wisdom is magnificent. So it says that God does teach us how to do the very practical things and very good scientific principles. 18 months ago, in August 2022, we began our journey through the book of Genesis. It's a long time ago. And on the 28th of August, we read these words in reference to the male and female that God had just created. And God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in numbers, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. Then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it, they will be yours for food. God blesses them and instructs them to be fruitful and multiply. It's a blessing and an instruction that are repeated many, many times throughout the biblical narrative. And it's repeated again by God to Jacob at Bethel, where he had a dream and he saw a staircase resting on the earth and angels going to and from. And there above it stood the Lord, and the Lord said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are living. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and the south. When God gives blessing and God gives directive, he also gives instructions. God doesn't tell us to go and multiply and then leave it up to us to figure it out. God doesn't say that there will be seed time and harvest and not instruct the farmer how to sow seed and how to process a harvest. To the farmer, he reveals how to sow and to reap. To Jacob, he reveals how to breed and to multiply his flocks. With our modern science, we've added considerable knowledge and understanding to that process by which seeds are sown and multiply. We understand how sowing and reaping works at a considerably detailed level. Still not so much about breeding speckled and striped sheep. But while knowledge and understanding may be helpful, obedience is essential. You actually don't need to know or to understand to obey. God has planted something or some things in your heart and in your mind and in your life. And he wants you to go and to reproduce those things, to multiply those things out to others. There are things that God has promised you, purposes that He has for your life. And right now you may not even know what those things are. You may be sitting there going, I don't know what God's purpose is for me. I've lived for 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years and I've never really figured it out. And we have a lot of focus on finding out what your mission is, your calling is in life. And that can be really good to know, but it's not essential. Because while knowledge and understanding may be helpful, obedience is actually sufficient. If all you can do is listen to Him with simple, childlike faith, you hear what He says, you do what He says, then you will be fruitful. God will multiply what it is that He's planted within you. God will bring forth in your life everything that He desires. One of my favorite video clips I came across was introduced to about 4 years ago now. It's called Sheep Among Wolves, Part 2. And it's a story of what God is doing in the church in Iran. So we talk about Iran this morning. Have a look, Sheep Among Wolves 2, it's on YouTube. And it's a move of God where disciples are being multiplied among the people in Iran. And I've got some free copies of a book here which talks about how the disciple-making movement, the Discovery Bible Study, came into being. I've got 5 copies free to give away. I can buy another 5 copies if I give those when I've given those 5 away. I gave one of those to Keith and Joy, who were here last week. I gave it to them in about 2018, and they gave it to a guy called Mark. And Mark and Katrina are using that in Laos. And that's what they spoke about at the beginning of February. I gave another copy to Mike Porteous, and him and his wife Anne read it in the next 2 or 3 days. And Mike's introduced it to Anthony, who was here last week. And Anthony's now connected in with some disciple-making experts, as they were, in Kenya, who will be coaching them through the process of a disciple-making movement. See, God is at work, and God is wanting to multiply that which He has planted in us. But the interesting thing that really stood out for me in the church in Iran is that most of the people leading that move of God are former drug pushers and former prostitutes. Not theologians. In fact, the evidence would be, apologies to all the theologians, is when the theologians come into the scene, the harvest pulls back. Because it starts to become about knowledge and understanding and not about obedience. And all God asks of us is obedience, and all of us can listen for His voice and obey. Whatever it is that God has planted in you. Remember, when we come back to these verses time and again, we are God's handiwork. You are God's handiwork. It's not my favorite translation. He also says that you are God's masterpiece. One translation, you are God's masterpiece. God has painted something in you. He's crafted something in you. He's planted something in you. And whether you understand that or not, all you need to do is hear Him and obey. And the other verse we keep coming back to, I am the vine, God says, Jesus says, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I remain in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. But if you remain in Him, you cannot do anything but bear good fruit, because you're hearing Him and walking in obedience to Him. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, and you ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. Because you are remaining in Him and His words are remaining in you. The things that you want are aligned with the things that He wants. And so I sound like a broken record. But I came here 9 years ago because I believe God wants to see a disciple-making movement in New Zealand and beyond. And when I talked with the leadership of the church, my understanding is that's what they were wanting to see. A multiplying movement of disciples, people who would come to faith but may never come to church as we know it, but they would come to obedient faith in Jesus Christ. But that's why we'll continue to speak about discipleship. That's what God planted me here for. And Jesus says, go out and multiply, make disciples. Go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. That's the beginning of the process, but that is so often where we stop. We say, we need you to give your life to Jesus. Become a disciple of Jesus. We will baptize you. And then so often we leave it there, but the command is teaching them to obey everything I have commanded. What's a disciple? Someone who obeys what God has commanded. I am not interested in getting people to make a decision to follow Jesus Christ or to give their life to Him. I know far too many people who have made that decision and have not followed through. My heart is to inspire people to follow Jesus, to listen to Him through His Word, by His Spirit, through the body of Christ, to hear what He says and simply walk in obedience. That's not easy. I'm a thinker. I'm an overthinker. And even in this last week, I find myself going, God, I don't know what to do. I don't have a plan. And repeatedly, even this morning, I hear God saying, doesn't matter. What am I saying right now? What's the step in front of you? Do that. Trust me. And if it sounds weird, like cutting sticks and stripping bits back and putting them in the trough so that it's like, you don't have to understand. You've just got to do. Why? Because we have a God who understands. And it's His plan and it's His purposes. My prayer is that our obedience will produce a fruitfulness and a multiplication of all good things. So often we read that Great Commission to go and make disciples of all nations. We think that's about getting lots and lots of people to make decisions. And therefore, making a disciple is getting someone to decide that they want to follow Jesus. But if making a disciple is about multiplying what God's in you, and so Bill, the heart to see God move in healing. As Bill comes into the congregation, he just wants to impart that so that we will want to speak with the same confidence and faith that Jesus Christ can heal and will. He wants to multiply that through you, Bill. That's why He's brought you here. And there's others in this congregation. In fact, all of you. God has planted something in you that He wants to multiply out through you into others. He wants your obedience to inspire others to walk in obedience, even when they don't know or understand. May we hear Him. What has God planted in your heart? What does He want to produce and multiply through you? Whatever it is, even if you don't know it, even if you don't understand it, the lesson is simple. Listen to Him through His Word, by His Spirit, through the body of Christ. And do what He says. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to this message from the Chapel in Te Atatū. For more information about the Chapel, please visit www.thechapel.org.nz or email info@thechapel.org.nz.